Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening for Lehigh Valley Discourse. And our topic this month is our heritage. It's the Moravians, the legacy and influences on Bethlehem and the Lehigh Valley provided by the Moravians. The Moravians were the early settlers of the Lehigh Valley, having settlements first in Nazareth in 1740 and then in Bethlehem. Founded in 1741, Bethlehem was the second community settlement in the Lehigh Valley. Then it was followed by Easton. Now, Easton was not Moravian, but I want to give you an idea of the sort of sequence. So Bethlehem was founded first, Easton was founded second in 1752, and Allentown was third in 1762. The Moravians settled in communities in the New World, while others, like the Pennsylvania Dutch, looked to individual lands to farm and settle. And keep that in mind, listeners, because the Moravians were planters, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But when they came, they looked at developing a community when other immigrants in the early days looked to developing their individual farms and farmland. The Moravian Church is sometimes confused as its own religion, like Mormon or Amish faiths, when it isn't. It is a denomination of the Protestant religion. Tonight, during this holiday season, we'll be revisiting the history, looking at the Moravian Church today, and acknowledging those values and traditions that have guided and sustained the Lehigh Valley over the past 277 years, and hopefully for the next 277 years as well. My guests tonight are Dr. Betsy Miller, who is president of the Northern Province Provincial Elders Conference, and Reverend Dave Bennett, who's president of the Eastern District. President, Eastern District. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for taking the time out of a very busy season to be with us and our listeners here at WDIY. Before we get into sort of the Moravian history and the influences and where it is today, can you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, maybe how you got to where you are? So, Betsy, I'm going to start with you.
Well, sure. Thank you very much, Sally. I was actually raised in Bethlehem. I'm a Freedom graduate. Went off to college and taught for a while, and it wasn't until I came back to Bethlehem that I became a part of the Moravian Church. I started Moravian Theological Seminary and halfway through thought maybe I should join this denomination. And I was ordained and then served the church for 25 years out in Wisconsin and returned to Bethlehem when I was elected to this current position in 2010 and have been reelected now twice, and I'm in my third and final term as president of the Provincial Elders Conference of the Moravian Church, Northern Province.
Wow. I was thinking for some reason that you actually had a dual growing up and Wisconsin was part of it, but no, church took you there.
The church took me there. Right.
Okay. And listeners, stay tuned to us because the church has taken her other places that we're going to be talking about as we go further into this conversation. Dave, how about you?
Well, in contrast to Betsy, I actually grew up in southern Illinois where the word Moravian was barely known. There was one Moravian church in Illinois, and I grew up in that church. Since the call to ministry, came out to Moravian Theological Seminary, and after graduating from there, was ordained and served in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada for about 10 years. Then in Hope, Indiana, which is just below Indianapolis, for about 5 years, and then was called to be chaplain of the college, Moravian College and Moravian Theological Seminary. And I did that until I was elected to this position in 2008, and I'm in my final term. I've got about a year and a half to go, and then I will leave this position.
Wow. Must have been interesting going from the church into the college environment.
It was. And the college, I enjoyed pastoral ministry. That was a wonderful thing. But the college, I love to play guitar, so the college gave me lots of opportunity to do worships with guitar and to just watch a new generation of leaders be formed and be a part of that.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, I'm glad you both found your way to Bethlehem, back to Bethlehem, and have joined us here. Listeners, we're going to talk a little bit right now about the history. Some of you may be very aware of it. Some of you may have gone to historic Bethlehem events and heard from Charlene Donches-Mowers, who is the head or the president of Historic Bethlehem Museums and Sites. But we're going to just reiterate some of this a little bit and talk about some key things that you need to have reinforced or you need to be made aware of about the history here in Bethlehem. So let's take a look and think about it today as I mentioned this. And Betsy, I'm going to also turn to you a little bit about this sort of pilgrimage around the world because you're more familiar with it. But listeners, they started out in Germany and then they came to the New World and people traveled by, I mean, they were like, you know, hobbits or, you know, just traveling the world by foot, by carriage, by boats that are nothing more than rowboats, basically.
Well, sure. And in 1727, I mean, you have to understand that Herrnhut, which is sort of the founding community of the renewed Moravian Church, is in Saxony, Germany. It's still there. It's still a thriving Moravian community. But back in the day, it was a small group of about 100 Moravians, people who had been welcomed onto the estate of a guy named Nicholas Ludwig von Zinzendorf.
Okay, that's
what German, he was. Yeah, German nobleman. And they sensed a call from God to preach the gospel around the world. And they had been welcomed as refugees onto this land. And so they had a particular burden, I think, in their hearts to go to the people that nobody else would go to. So historically, we would head off to our first mission area was in the West Indies to St. Thomas. And we didn't go to the white plantation owners. We went to the slaves who were working the plantations, lived among them to share the gospel. And that was just the first of many, many explorations across the world. Imagine a group of 100 people committing to go to Greenland, South Africa, the East West Indies, to the U.S., and then eventually all around the world. In today's that's just inconceivable in today's concept. And, you know, of course, long before airplanes, I mean, they sort of hitchhiked, as it were, right, on sailboats going across the Atlantic.
So were these 100, like, did they split up or did they go in mass, do you think, for
No, actually, it's a precursor to what happened then in Bethlehem, which is the community in Herrnhut existed to foster the mission movement.
Okay.
So everybody in the community, it was a, you know, a shared communal setting.
Okay.
And they sent off missionaries two by two.
Two by two. Oh, my goodness.
To go wherever they sensed a call. And it was sort of remarkable when I, you know, I mean, again, the story they say in Alaska is they went to where nobody else was. So there was not a competition for the mission movement. You'd get to this inlet in Alaska and the Presbyterians were there. And you get to the next inlet and the Episcopalians were there. And so they just went further west down the Alaskan coast until there was no church at the inlet where the Kuskokwim River empties into to the ocean. And so that's where the Moravians settled. I mean, and that's a specific example that happened other places in South Africa, in Greenland, in the East West Indies, here in the U.S., et cetera.
Well, and part of, you know, what we had shared before the show was it seemed like the traditional religions went to the coastal cities.
Yeah.
And so what you're reinforcing is the fact that the Moravians would go beyond that. That's how they got to Bethlehem. We were not a coastal location.
Right.
Yeah. So 1741 is a very strong date here in Bethlehem, and that's the sort of founding on Christmas Eve of the community of Bethlehem.
And let me just add that Count Zinzendorf was here then.
Right.
And it was on Christmas Eve. They were holding a worship service, and he named the city Bethlehem at that time. And the hymn that Moravians often sing, Jesus, call thou me, was not Jerusalem lowly, Bethlehem, 'twas that gave us Christ to save us. And so that's how that has
that
stuck.
Happened. That came around. Wow, right. That's incredible. And there was one man, John Heckenwalder. Now, there's a Heckenwalder place.
Heckenwalder,
mm-hmm. Thank you. He logged over 30,000 miles in his history of doing pilgrimages or missionary work.
And there were no frequent flyer miles back then.
Right. No fast transit, no technology to help him.
And he particularly went to Ohio. I don't know, mm-hmm. Dave, if you want to say, I mean.
Well, I was going to mention that one of the neat things I read in one of the Bethlehem diaries, and it was connected with one of the first trips that the Moravians made from Bethlehem to North Carolina. And of course, they had brought their supplies over on the ships that had come. And so they had a wagon that was European made. And one of the interesting things as they started out was that the axle was longer than the wagons that were made here. And so it wouldn't fit in the ruts, right? It was unbalanced. And As I read that, I thought it's such a metaphor for how the Moravians settled this area, because the first thing they had to do was adapt.
Yeah.
So they had to cut the axle to fit in so that the wheels would fit in the grooves. And that exercise of adaptation is just something that was repeated historically to form Bethlehem as it is.
Yeah. Wow, that's, you know.
It's sort of like the gospel is universal. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. that's the unchanging thing, but the adaptation is contextual.
Right.
So the message is best heard in the language, in the context, wherever you are.
Yeah. Well, we're very fortunate here in Bethlehem and in Lehigh Valley. We had leaders, both of the city and the Moravian community, that has now the largest collection of original historic buildings in the United States, thanks to them and their preservation. We have the German colonial architecture here in historic Bethlehem. When many communities, and I remember this I hate to give my age, growing up, that in the 60s and 70s, they were destroying, they were razing everything in sight to build this new modern approach to communities. But our community leaders saw the need to protect and cherish, and therefore we have this largest collection in the world of these buildings. So that's correct. And we want to talk about a few of them because there are some key influences that came from them. There was the apothecary in 1752. Who had an apothecary back in the colonial
right,
times?
I mean,
you know, and the Moravians then grew their own herbs and whatever to be able to support the medicinal needs of the community. Burnside Plantation.
James Burnside was actually an outsider that got special permission to put his, built his farm out outside of the land, sort of the confines of Bethlehem, and turned that into an effective working farm that thankfully has been restored today.
So let's talk about that sort of territory. What, inside, outside, how did that happen? The Moravians had their own communities that they just basically brought people into, and other things, like, I mean, Southside Bethlehem eventually became sort of the industry, the business side, but the religious community stayed pretty much intact until the late 50s on the north side. Is that correct?
Well, I think it was a very focused community, and part of that was intentional. The idea that if we focused ourselves, one, on exploring our relationship with Jesus, and they did that a lot through the choir system, which I know we're going to talk a little bit about later, but also they became focused in their trades, such that as they created what was called the general economy, that all of that and all of the trades were a sole purpose, really, was to spread the gospel. And so anything that was raised, anything that was sold, there was a stranger store that sold goods to outside individuals who could come and get grains. They were big on butter, and they could buy things there. Otherwise, they would have to travel down to Philadelphia. And so any of those proceeds went toward support of the missionaries.
Okay. Well, and they had a number of buildings through the industrial quarter supported that, and then also supported the quote-unquote strangers, the outside community as well. We have the smithy, that tools.
Everything that an economy needed to function well for a community, the Moravians had to build because
it wasn't here.
It wasn't here. So the smithy, the tannery, the waterworks. I mean, remarkable story about the waterworks as the first public water system. Figuring out ways to make this community work and using the monocacy, and then realizing those of us who know Bethlehem, what a steep incline there is up to the current buildings that we think of at Central Moravian Church, but also all along Church Street. So the community was a closed community for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And which is ironic because today I think Moravians are known for their hospitality, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in our current. But all the buildings that we see are part of how that choir system was lived out. There's the Brethren's House and the Widow's House and the Single Sister's House. And that was part of the way we organized our spiritual life back in the 18th century.
Okay.
And Dave, I don't know if you want to talk about how we're reimagining that today, or if you'd, Sally, like us to wait.
That's fine. No, let's just go with it.
Zinzendorf, most especially, had an idea that we could learn and explore our relationship with Christ more effectively when done so in groups with either like age or gender or marital status. And so faith study was done in those groups, and a lot of activity also was done in those groups. And that choir system really became the foundation of what that communal society was and what it did. And so we actually found that as we explore our own history, we were probably the most vibrant and had our most mission zeal during that period of time. And so as we thought about that, we wondered what a 21st century choir system would look like. And so we had a number...
I've often wondered that too myself.
We've had a number...
Well, the choir system's nothing to do with music. I think that's an important corrective there. Yeah, it was how we organized ourselves. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so we started studying that, the history behind that and what it would look like. And so we've come out now with a new program with a lot of work of some good faithful Moravians across the northern province, a new spiritual companioning program, which we're now piloting at a couple congregations to see how it's working. But it's again, it's not based upon gender or age, but it is a very intentional way of exploring our relationship with Christ together, hearing Christ in community, and being very intentional about that.
Okay. All right, that's interesting because I often walked past the sisters' homes and the brothers' home and all that kind of stuff, and kept thinking about how did they live like that? How did things work in a community that way? But obviously, it worked very well because it laid the foundation for Bethlehem and then opening the community.
Well, yeah, and today, of course, our concept of the nuclear family, we think, why would you want to live that way? And yet, it formed family because your primary relationship was not to your nuclear family so much as it was to the community of faith and to Jesus Christ.
Well, and I think one of the disappointing things today is we've lost a sense of community in most of our areas. We have back porches. We don't have front porches.
Right.
We don't know our neighbors to the right or to the left of us. There's nothing connecting us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the gifts that the Moravians have given to Bethlehem.
Yeah. And I think the choir system also was a very intentional spiritual mentoring, which I think we lost somewhere along the way. We can all think back to our congregations and individuals there who were mentors, but in that system, family was built with mentors built in.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We're doing this program in a couple of segments, and we're about to close on the first segment, but I want our listeners to know that Historic Moravian Bethlehem is one of only 8 National Historic Landmark districts in Pennsylvania, one of only about 200 in the entire United States. It preserves 2 National Historic Landmarks, the 1741 Gemeinde House and the 1762 Waterworks. So when you think about and go through Bethlehem and see all these buildings, I want you to have some of this rich history and knowledge about how it started, these brave souls that came over 2 by 2 and basically helped us develop in this new world. So we're going to be taking a short break. My guests are Dr. Betsy Miller and Reverend Dave Bennett of the Provincial Elders Conference and the Eastern District.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse with our guests this evening, Reverend Dr. Betsy Miller, President of Northern Province Provincial Elders Conference, and Reverend Dave Bennett, who's President of the Eastern District. So as we began the first segment of the show, we wanted to give a little history, which I think you got from listening to us. Now we want to get into, where are the Moravians today? What are they doing? How is the denomination growing, spreading the word? And I'm going to turn it over to Reverend Dr. Betsy Miller for this segment, because she just came back from Peru not too long ago, so I know she's traveling.
Well, thanks, Sally. The Moravian Church is a worldwide denomination. We are located in all kinds of places around the world. There are we are divided into what we call provinces, which is not a it's just a sort of a geographical area that identifies a group of a cluster of Moravians. And currently, there are 24 provinces around the world. We started out, of course, in Germany, and then went to various places. And the efforts of our mission initiatives have borne fruit in those places. Of course, early on, it was Europe and North America doing mission work, sending missionaries to mostly the Southern Hemisphere, if you would think about that. And today, there are Moravians in Alaska, there's Moravians in South Africa, Nepal, Sweden, Honduras, Nicaragua, and all kinds of places in between. Provinces are semi-autonomous, self-governing churches that have chosen to stay as a sort of a loose federation in the what's called the Worldwide Moravian Church, or the Unitas Fratrum, which is a Latin term with a gender-specific fratrum, meaning the unity of the brethren, but we're also brothers and sisters around the world. And we agree together through what we call the ground of the unity, which is our faith and doctrinal statement, sort of basic principles about our belief in Jesus Christ, the triune God, and our focus on fellowship and service and mission. And those 24 provinces get together every 2 years, the leaders, just the one leader from each province. So I would represent the northern province. And we continue the work that we do and sort of check in and set strategy. And then every 7 years we get together three people from all those provinces for a week-long meeting. And the meetings move around the world among the four regions of the unity, which is Europe, Africa, North America, and Central America, Latin American region. So those, if you think of the four quadrants of the world. And, of course, you can imagine that in the 1700s, up until about the mid-20th century, Europe and North America were the primary provinces. And it was wherever we went, we always built schools first and then churches. We'll talk a little bit more about our emphasis on education later. And one of the things that I've always was struck by in the mission movement is Moravians weren't afraid to fail. We went to Greenland. I mean, why in the world would you go? I mean, you know, talk about an inhospitable place. It didn't work. So we left. We turned that work over to somebody else. I often wonder today if we would sort of go about our work with the same kind of reckless abandon, which is really faithfulness. Anyway, so today, by the mid-20th century, the missionary efforts of those who came from Germany and North America actually have borne more fruit. So the era of colonialization ended. Moravians, people actually in the Lehigh Valley would probably be surprised to know that in all of Europe and North America, there's only about 65,000 Moravians. There are a million Moravians in Tanzania alone, Tanzania in East Africa. So basically, there's 1.3 million Moravians around the world, and less than 100,000 live north of, well, in the Northern Hemisphere. So that's a remarkable story.
Right? Yeah.
So we have a lot to learn. And one of the things that I enjoy most is watching the mission efforts of what were the former mission provinces now bearing fruit. So it doesn't take long. I mean, Tanzania has got missionary outreach in Malawi and Uganda and Ethiopia and Zaire and Congo, all their neighboring countries, as they continue to spread the gospel. So, you know, that's kind of where we are today. I mean, I can talk a little bit about the trip. You wanted me to talk about my trip to Peru. In August, I was in Tanzania at first All-Africa Moravian Women's Conference. I was the only woman there not from the continent of Africa, which was quite humbling. They asked me to do the Bible studies. But you want to see 400 Moravian women from Africa sing and dance and preach and pray. It's quite humbling.
Phenomenal, yeah.
Yeah, the mission movement ought to come the other direction.
Yeah.
And then just last month, I was in Peru. We have four churches that we started in Peru that, you know, have become part of the Moravian Church, and they have reached out to others in the region. So I got on a plane and a car and another car and then a boat to go to the Amazon region of Peru and watch as 23 congregations joined the Moravian Church worldwide. That was a pretty powerful story.
Yeah.
And I got to say, you know, we always say, well, the Moravians went where nobody else would go, and sometimes think of it as God-forsaken land. And I'm here to tell you that there is no land that God has forsaken, and God is at work in those places. And I was privileged to be there and see that happening. So it was a powerful story, powerful witness.
So are there any other sort of like Peru, sort of like a new territory or a new, are there other areas outside of Africa that seem to be
actually Cuba
bubbling?
Is another new area, which of course with communism and how Cuba has been closed, that's been a fairly new development. And that work is under the leadership of the Southern Province, which is headquartered in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And they are also reaching out and now going to Haiti as well. So new work is in Sierra Leone, in West Africa. Those are, and actually the Peruvians are reaching out to Ecuador. So they're not wasting any time sharing the good news.
Yeah.
And they're excited to talk about who the Moravians are. So all that stuff's been, all of our documents have been translated into Spanish, for instance.
Okay. Now, you're correct. I think that a lot of people listening to the show are surprised with the reach of the Moravians. But Dave, how are we doing here in the Lehigh Valley? This is your district. What's going on here in the Lehigh Valley?
In the Lehigh Valley in particular, I want to talk about the Esperanza ministry, new ministry. But before I get to that, I want to talk a little bit about we've had a number of historians say to us that we are more ourselves as Moravians when we act as a mission movement than we are when we act as a denomination. And that started affecting how we did outreach at a provincial level.
And how we saw ourselves.
Yes. We used to try to plant churches, and we weren't very good at it. But when we started realizing that we're pretty good at starting ministries, we kind of started to find ourselves again. And so Esperanza is one of the new ministries here in the Lehigh Valley that began certainly offering support, a place of faith gathering for the Latino community on the south side of Bethlehem. And even more so has become a place of support and resource for displaced individuals who are coming newly into the area.
Mm-hmm.
And they have become somewhat of a clearinghouse for things that are needed, whether it's food, whether it's clothing. And that is run by Reverend Tracy and Rhonda Robinson, a husband-wife ministry team. And they've been going now for about 8 years. And just are doing a wonderful ministry. We're right now in the process of relocating them, and hopefully we'll have announcements about that in the new future of where their new place of ministry will be.
Mm-hmm.
More away from Lehigh Valley, we, again, under the heading of ministry, we have started a very different kind of ministry in Sherwood Park, Alberta. It's called Common Ground. It's a cafe. And it is a place of where people can go, certainly relax, have a cup of coffee. They're known for their dill pickle soup.
And I like dill
pickles. It's better than it sounds.
Yeah, I like that.
But what their real ministry is simply building community. Their space is available to different organizations in the community. The mayor has even been using it for city council meetings.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's also a place of spiritual dialogue. People who probably would not be attracted to the organized church find a place there they can go, explore their own faith, find support, friendship, and community. It's a totally volunteer-based cafe that runs off volunteer hours. And is doing wonderful ministry in that regard and building community. And I think, Betsy, you want to talk a little bit about Tricklebee?
Yeah, Tricklebee Cafe is another one of those emerging ministries that doesn't look like a church but shares God's love every day. It's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a rough neighborhood, actually. And
Tricklebee.
Tricklebee, I know. The
The trick will be.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Reverend Christy Melby Gibbons is the founder, pastor of that place, and she said her mom always grew up, you know, she grew up hearing her mom will say, well, the trick will be if we can get this to happen, or the trick will be if we can, so she named it Trickle Bee Cafe, and there's a honeybee as their logo. It's a pay what you can cafe, again, volunteer run, mixed with agape meals, creativity nights, and a safe place. And one of those, you know, if you can afford to pay $10 for a meal, and Dave, you can't afford to pay anything but want to wash dishes that day, it's that kind of a place. It's part of the larger organization One World Everyone Eats. And she has done a wonderful job as an ambassador of the church in a community that desperately needed some good news.
Well, and it seems like if you're listening to the news, which I'm trying not to listen to much anymore, on, you know, between Philadelphia and some of the municipalities, there's a strong need for us to come together and have a community place where everybody can assemble and, regardless of background or financial position, work together.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably, I mean, so, you know, Dave, this is your area. There's 14 Moravian churches in the greater Lehigh Valley, sort of going from Emmaus to Nazareth. You wouldn't kind of think of that.
No.
And some of those little tiny churches are doing really mighty things. I don't know if you want to talk about Mountain View.
A Mountain View Moravian Church in Hellertown became inspired by a church on Staten Island, a Moravian church, that was doing this enormous clothing drive. And now Mountain View is a relatively small church.
It's tiny.
And they have taken on this clothing distribution that has become enormously helpful to people in the area. And they are the little church that can.
Uh-huh.
That's how I've described them. And they now twice a year distribute clothing, and they will go all day. They provide a lunch as well for people who are waiting. There's a long line, and they're doing a wonderful job under Reverend Jody Lean Harney is the pastor there, and just doing inspirational work with a small group of people who are passionate about that ministry.
Yeah.
I remember talking to one of the members who's on the older side of old, actually, who said, you know, we weren't sure. We thought we've sort of forgotten what our mission was, but this has helped us reclaim who we are and why we are.
Yeah.
And that's pretty humbling. I mean, the thing I love about that ministry is you don't have to show any ID. You don't, you know, have any government kind of handout stuff. And you go shopping. I mean, it's racks of clothing hung on department store racks. And you get to pick 10 items per person. I mean, it's not like, oh, you get one T-shirt and you get one pair of pants. It's a sense of hospitality, and a shopper comes with you from the church. And it's a beautiful thing.
Okay, so if somebody's listening and they want to donate to this cause, do they just contact the church?
They
could. Okay.
Yeah. I would say that all of our congregations, I mean, a lot of churches everywhere, but I think Moravians have done a wonderful job of feeding people, clothing people. I mean, Moravians like to eat. So let's capitalize on that spiritual gift and make sure we feed others.
Well, in that spirit, one of the things that I really enjoy about Trickle Bee is that once a week they do what's called an agape meal, which is a meal of love. It's a completely free meal. Anybody can come in. It's a shared table. And it has sort of the feeling of a sacrament as people gather around a table, and they do that in Christ's name. Mm-hmm. And so a family of faith is being built around that ministry.
Yeah. There was something I read, and I wish I could recall exactly what it was, but it talked about the fact that when people from different cultures are able to sit around the table together, there's so much awareness and understanding that evolves from that as they go then into their normal lives and routine.
Yeah.
And it provides a great base.
Some of the other ministries here in the Lehigh Valley that I'd like to talk about, which are really important but are not new. I mean, Moravian College, sixth oldest college.
Women's College.
That's right.
As.
It began the whole concept of education for Moravians through John Amos Comenius was that it was one of the first influences to educate women. And that certainly has been a part of the college's history. Moravian Theological Seminary is the seminary that certainly educates our pastors. Those are true ministries to the area that have been longstanding. Moravian Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Education really is part of, as Betsy said, our influence, I believe, and one of the first things we would do when we'd come to an area.
Well, and as I noted as I was researching, is education of women and children,
yes. Oh, yes.
Which back in the 1700s was something
yes.
really not done, but continues
right.
today.
Right. And yeah. I would add Moravian Theological Seminary here in Bethlehem educates Moravians around the world through the gift of technology, so distance learning. There's a woman in Albania who is getting her Master's of Divinity online through Moravian Theological Seminary. And so that's exciting. There's people all over the world tuning in, if you will, through mm-hmm. electronic media.
Well, it's not just Moravians, though, too. Other people that go to the seminary go into other denominations,
oh.
correct? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's not just educating Moravians. The irony for me is certainly John Amos Comenius gets most of the attention being the father of modern education, and his statue is on the front lawn at Moravian College. But it really was Benigna Zinzendorf who was the key figure that began what would become Moravian College.
And she was the daughter of Count
von Zinzendorf. Yes.
Okay. And she was like in her teens when that happened.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. It's amazing where it started, how it's going, and I'm really anxious to hear about you getting back to sort of the core values, the core roots of in today what established the Moravian Church back in 1741.
Right. So I think that's part of who we are claiming ourselves to be today. So our core beliefs have not really changed. We believe in God.
Oh, right.
Triune God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, or Creator, Redeemer, Sustainer. The beliefs don't change, but how we live out our faith has to change in order to be accessible over the centuries. But interestingly, I mean, and I'm not the historian here, but in the 18th century, women were ordained. And then as we tried to look like everybody else, we stopped ordaining women until the mid-20th century.
Yeah.
And I know I put my hands on my hips over that as well, Sally.
Yeah, you can't see us, but I'm, you know, jumping in my seat here.
But we have been ordaining women now for, you know, well, since the mid-20th century. And I would say that there's actually over a third of our congregations here in the Northern right. Province are served by ordained women.
All right.
And so,
well, listeners, it's time for us to take another short break. My guests this evening are Reverend Dr. Betsy Miller, who's president of the Northern Province Provincial Elders Conference, and Reverend Dave Bennett, who's president of the Eastern District. This is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse this evening with our guest, the Reverend Dr. Betsy Miller, who's president of Northern Province Provincial Elders Conference, and Reverend Dave Bennett, who is president of the Eastern District. Our first segment, we talked about sort of the history of the Moravians and the Lehigh Valley and the settlement here. And we were talking in the second segment a bit about where the Moravian Church is today and all they're doing in the world, worldwide effort and influence. But I'd like to focus this last segment on the influences of the Moravians in Bethlehem and the Lehigh Valley and the holiday season, you know, some traditions that we get. Before I ask Betsy and Dave to talk about some of the key influences, I thought it best to talk to some of our current leaders and ask them what they thought the contribution of the Moravians were to our community. And from President Brian Grigsby of the college, Moravian College, he said, "I think their greatest contribution is education. Comenius is the father of modern education, and they set up schools all over the world." And if you were listening before, you learned that one of the things that the Moravians have done is they've usually gone and built schools before they've, you know, built churches in their missionary work. From Mayor Donchez, Bob Donchez, equal education, healthcare, women's rights. He called them progressives. I don't know if that's the correct term or not. We'll talk about that. And then from Don Cunningham, who's a former mayor and president of our Economic Development Corporation, the infrastructure to support a manufacturing economy. Moravians built the first municipal water system in the American colonies. And Don goes on to talk about the production manufacturing economy that the Moravians brought to us, as well as education, music, and cultural arts. So, Betsy and Dave, as we look at primary influences, I tried to name a couple of them, but from your perspective, what do you feel are the primary influences today that the Moravians have made in our 21st century Lehigh Valley, Bethlehem?
I think one of the key ones that I'm aware of is hospitality. Now, that's kind of ironic because we were a closed communal society in this area when we sort of settled and started. And it's interesting to see now that hospitality has become one of our key ministries. We have Morningstar Senior Living in Nazareth. We have Moravian Manor in Lititz. We have Moravian Heritage Village here in Bethlehem. And so we have found a ministry in building community within community.
Okay.
And that's, I think, one influence, particularly in the Lehigh Valley, that's there.
Well, I think just the whole sense of place here in Bethlehem is an influence that the Moravians have given. I mean, all the old buildings remind us every time you walk down or drive down Church Street or up Main Street, you just sort of have a sense that this place has been here a long time and that the gift of place in a world where there's so much sort of movement and transient whatever, is in itself another gift of hospitality, of you are home here.
Right.
And I think the Christmas season is probably a time when we see that the most. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or...
Well, let's just wait a few minutes and give our listeners a few more things before we look to the holidays. One of the things that got me when I read a book recently written by Jeff Parks was the sense of inclusion that the Moravians had. And I think in this world today, that's extremely important. Betsy, Dave, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, the Moravians are a welcoming and inclusive community. That hospitality extends to whoever you are. I love Central Moravian churches. Wherever you are in your faith journey, you are welcome here. And we mean that from an identity perspective. We mean that from a faith perspective as well. And so Moravians don't have this, okay, when you get to this high bar, then you can join. It's wherever you are, you're welcome on a journey because we're all on a journey together. And I think that sense
different.
Of inclusion.
That's very different, yeah.
Yeah. Moravians would rather focus on living with faith and joy and welcome than getting all the doctrine right.
And
you know, I mean,
checking off all the boxes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that none of us is perfect, and we don't expect anybody else to be perfect, and we just are on that common search for meaning and purpose and life and faith and salvation together. And so I think I had one non-Moravian, he was a former president of the National Council of Churches in the U.S., actually say that Moravians are a both-and church in an either-or world.
Nice.
And yeah, if you really ponder what that means, I mean, and he said that 20 years ago, both and church in an either or world, which, you know, we're not going to divide you up into little interest groups. We're just going to be on a journey together. And I often would say to when I was pastoring a local church, you know, if to people who are interested in joining, you know, we'd like, you know, tell us more about the Moravians. What's this church all about? I said, if you want the 10 checklists to get to heaven, the black and white life, you know, of faith, you probably won't be comfortable here. But if you want to learn how to live in the gray areas of life, then join us on that journey.
Okay.
And so that was...
Yeah. A core value for the Moravian Church in a motto is in essentials unity and non-essentials liberty and in all things love. And that has become, in this day and age, a very important value motto for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the in all things love is actually the most important part. It's also the hardest part.
Absolutely.
But it's about celebrating diversity rather than tolerating it.
Right.
And there's a big difference between I'll put up with you if you think differently than I do, rather than saying I need you to think differently, because together we will be stronger when we can sit at table and we can talk about that with love.
Well, and that goes back, obviously to the very beginning, but in the God's little acre, right? There's inclusion in the cemetery. It's not separated.
Right.
As far as gender or race or whatever.
Well, actually, you are separated by gender. Because you were part of that, the same way you lived in that single sister, brother's house.
So you're in a choir in the
cemetery. You were in the choir in the cemetery, but the gravestones historically were flat.
Right.
Meaning everybody's equal before God. I mean, you know, it wasn't how big a tombstone can you afford, but
or monument that you want to,
In death, we're all equal.
And one other thing I wanted our listeners to understand and realize, well, actually there's two here, but healthcare. I think the Moravians advanced healthcare here in the Lehigh Valley, because earlier I talked about the apothecary that was found in 1752. But during the Revolutionary War, there were a lot of folks that were sent here to recuperate, and my understanding is that the Moravians were like the first to understand that you've got to change airflow in the sick rooms to get rid of the viruses, the bacteria that continue, because otherwise it was sort of shut down and people would continue to get sick and die. So they opened up the windows, they opened up the doors, and people started to heal. So, I mean, they brought some very interesting concepts. From Don Cunningham, we heard about the economic system and industrial advanced. The other thing that I wanted to mention was music and cultural arts. Because the Moravians have a strong music background. Our high schools have very strong musical backgrounds when other high schools are letting those programs go. So, you know, those are some of the influences, I think. Is there anything else before?
Well, I think the music is a really important one. And I do think also the college, Moravian College, has had a lot to do with its fingerprint on the Lehigh Valley as it goes with music. I mean, I think of college Christmas Vespers that happen the first 2 weeks in December. Each of those services have 1,000 people in them. And so there's 6,000 people who will hear Moravian College Choir, experience a Moravian Christmas candlelight service. And that heritage of music, because that's a totally music service, is just really a part of who we are.
Okay. So let's jump from there into some of the traditions, some of the holiday traditions. And Betsy, I'm going to look to you at this part because of some research.
An equal opportunity here.
Well, it is, but I know that you did your thesis on some of these traditions. So.
Well, so there are what we would call Moravian traditions, particularly around Christmas time. And a lot of people think of them as quaint old traditions, but I tried to figure out and research some ways that we could make them the seeds for a new engagement, a new exploration of what it means to be a Christian today. Of course, the star, you know, it's pretty hard to be in Bethlehem and not notice Moravian star or an Advent star. It goes up the first Sunday of Advent and it stays up through Epiphany. And people have heard this story or not, but it was the result of a geometry class in the 1800s in Germany. All right, you guys, figure out how to make it. And if you really study the formation of that star, it's 26 points.
It's 26,
some of the bases are four-sided, and some of the bases of those points are three-sided. And they're put together. They're not all that easy to put together, but beautiful. And they're internally lit. And, of course, the symbol to that is that Christ is the light of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the question I often have asked is, How do we live that out? How do we carry around a star in our daily lives? How do we show forth that light, not just at Christmas time, but all year long?
Okay.
The love feast is another one. There's a lot of everybody goes, what in the world is a love feast? It's nothing weird.
It's nothing from the 60s or
70s. No. It's actually an old agape meal from biblical times, and it had its origins back in 1727. The Moravian community in Herrnhut, Germany, was about to split apart over lots of theological divisions. It's a very, very tenuous time in our history. And the community went to church and had a powerful outpouring of the Holy Spirit, where they felt that they could once again be reunited in purpose. And the divisions were still there, but not as important as what brought them together. And the love feast came out of well, if everybody goes back home to make a meal after church, then this conversation won't keep going. And so the story has it that Zinzendorf had food brought out to the people so they could keep going. Today, we think of Love Feast as, you know, there's that sweet coffee that comes in mugs and a nice little bun that's wrapped in a napkin, and you listen to the choir sing while it's served in church. But I think it's so much more than that. For me, Love Feast is an opportunity to ask, how can we keep conversations going about what God's doing in our midst, which is what happened in the 18th century. And the thing that we always emphasize when we have a love feast is this is not a sacrament. This is not Holy Communion or baptism or, you know, any of the rites of the church. And therefore, it's non-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
So love feast has become a gift to the ecumenical and interreligious world, because when you want to have a conversation with either another Christian denomination or our Muslim brothers or sisters, Jewish brothers or sisters, you can have a love feast because it's just a meal.
Okay.
And in fact, Dave, I don't know if you want to talk about in February of 2017, in the midst of the immigration crisis here in this country, we found a way to come together around a love feast, and it was held at Raving College.
Immigration became more of an issue. There was a cry among the varying faith communities, interfaith communities, to do something together that would make a statement. And in the
bear
end,
bear witness to our common faith.
Yes, in the end, where there was common ground was around a Moravian love feast that all of the faith communities could come together. We had breads from all over the world. Our Moravian clergy here in the area worked really hard on this and brought together over 300 people, as I recall,
yep.
In the auditorium at Moravian College, and shared this love feast, had some messages of hope and unity, and that love feast really facilitated that kind of interfaith unity in a way that was very pleasing to all of us and meaningful to others.
Okay. Yeah, some of the rabbis and imams that were present at that night said there is no liturgical component of our experience, Christian, Jewish, or Muslim, that could have taken the place. I mean, we couldn't have done that together. But the love feast became a way that we could celebrate something together. And in all things love, then became part of that again.
Do you think that there'll be a reoccurring opportunity to do that? I mean,
there might be. I haven't heard any conversation, but I think now people are aware of what can happen within a love feast in a both Christian but also interfaith environment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So some of the other things, Betsy, that that you were bringing into trying to figure out the traditions and how they come in. Anything else come to
mind?
Well,
particularly the beeswax candle. So, I mean, as Dave mentioned earlier, when you go to a college vespers or on Christmas Eve, there will be a beeswax. I mean, it's a candlelight service. And if you go into the Moravian Bookshop, you'll see these for sale as well. It's a beeswax candle with a red paper fringe on the bottom of it.
I've seen
and
them.
You've seen those?
Mm-hmm.
This, interestingly, was a children's lesson back in the 1800s. And one of the bishops, Johannes de Vaartville, was trying to explain to children what the meaning of Christmas was about. And so he had a candle. And the beeswax, I'm told, symbolizes the purity of Christ. The red fringe around, although it's useful to keep you from burning yourself with the hot wax, is a reminder of the blood of Christ.
Oh, okay.
So Jesus was born to die for us, you know, as our path to salvation. And then the light, of course, the flame is the light of Christ. And so I'm always amazed at these trays of lit candles coming out into the sanctuary and being passed down pews, and then the beauty of singing our faith and proclaiming that Christ is born. It's a powerful symbol. And the candles in the window, Dave, you talk about the white candle in every window.
Yeah, it's a tradition in certain areas in the Moravian world where a candle will be placed in each window of the house, symbolizing that Christ is welcome here, and so you are welcome here.
Okay.
And that is just a sort of an outward sign. Some Moravian homes and will have them year-round, and some will put them in at Christmas time.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I'd like our listeners to understand is the puts.
Oh.
The Moravian puts. And,
sure.
You know, we've got a couple churches here that do that in your district.
Yeah, puts, especially in the Lehigh Valley, having a Christmas puts at your church and many in their homes is a very special thing. It's it's not only a family tradition in the sense in a home, but a family tradition in the sense of the church family. It's a whimsical way, really, to tell the story, the capital T-H-E, and a way of telling our story. So in a puts, there usually are scenes of the story of Christ's birth, but then also there'll be scenes of the contemporary. Maybe the church's, there'll be a model of the church building there, as well as other things, ministries that are there. And it's a way of placing their ministries in the context of the wider story of Jesus' birth.
That it was my first time to a puts, and I was surprised because I was used to a manger scene.
It's what it is.
Yeah. And then I saw modern, well, quote unquote, modern day types of other activities in that in same environment. So it was very fascinating.
And it's not just about the puts, too. It's about the family's gathering. So the moss gathering day, because most of them use moss. Well, that has to be gathered in the Poconos. And so that's a family day where the churches will gather. They'll take a picnic and, as a church, go into the mountains and gather moss.
Wow.
Well, I think the modern day part, Sally, is a reminder that the story lives on, you know, and we're part of that story.
Okay.
So that's what has meaning for me.
Yeah. Well, we're about to wrap up this program, and I'm so sorry because there's another list of things that I'd like to share with our listeners, but what I would like to ask them to do is explore on your own. You know, go in and do some internet research. Come down to downtown Bethlehem, you know, ask questions about our history, our roots, and where we're going. And I definitely want to thank you both so much for taking the time to be here. So Reverend Dr. Betsy Miller and Reverend Dave Bennett, you took time out of your holiday season to be here with us. Thank you so much for sharing the history and the continued growth and the traditions of the Moravian community here in the Lehigh Valley. Thank you. Listeners, this is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse.